And one, and a two, and welcome to the Tales from the Long Box podcast. This is episode 76, Random Comics from the Long Box.
Woo!
I am Chris Mosby.
I am Caleb Gerard.
I'm Murray Fox.
Man. And as we mentioned in the title, today we will be talking about, do like we have done in the past, which we had a lot of fun with, is picking random comics out of our long boxes, or you know, in my case, off of Comixology's webpage, and picking a couple out and talking about them, and why we like them, what's fun about them, and all that good stuff. So, and here we go.
76, The Spirit of 76, starring David Cassidy. You gotta see that. Really bad movie. Really bad movie.
Really bad movie? Okay, well, alright then.
But it's got David Cassidy. And, oh my god, it's got Carl Reiner.
Carl Reiner in it? Before he stopped to, oh wait, yeah, Carl Reiner. Okay, yeah, I'm thinking somebody else.
Yeah, I think he must be. There's only one Carl Reiner. Sorry, 76 always makes me think of that movie.
So. Alright then.
The mind she does a wonder.
Okay, so we are talking about random comics. Who wants to start this little shindig? Since I haven't picked my random comics yet, it's been crazy.
Well, Murray wants to. He said so. I heard him.
I looked at houses yesterday and things going on. And Friday got my final driver's license and all this, and I'm just completely unprepared for today. And I apologize.
That's good. Get a house with a hot tub.
Actually, the one we looked at does.
Oh.
Big enough for two.
Is there any other type of hot tub? Otherwise, it's just a bathtub.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Get a little bottle of Coke. What is that? Oh, shit. All of a sudden, I was thinking of that Tim Meadows sketch on Saturday Night Live. Cavassier.
Yeah. So, anyway... That's what's going on with me.
Alrighty. Well, I am not buying a house, so I was able to dig through the long boxes. Actually, you know what? I don't think I have any more long boxes. I have no... They're all short. I converted from long to short a long time ago.
Well, mine are in storage, or I'd look at them.
Alrighty. Anyway, I dug through.
You dug
through. And I grabbed... I'm going to start with Marvel. I grabbed a Fantastic Four, and it was Fantastic Four number 45 or number 474, depending which numbering system they were going by. They have both numbers on the cover.
Oh, this is when they were dual numbering all these series that they started over.
Yes, yeah. So this is from what year? Oh, it would be nice if they had like the... Remember when they had little... information boxes on the front. Oh, there it is. It's on the second page.
I'm going to guess. Hold on. Let me guess. It is 2003.
You are close. 2001.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, it's kind of a... I just closed my eyes and grabbed it, and it is by...
Hey, this is a family podcast. Take it easy.
It is by 8 million people. It is Carlos Pacheco is the co-plotter, along with Rafael Marin, and Jeff Loeb is the writer, and Jeff Johnson is the penciler, and I think that's about it.
I mean, did you say Pacheco was plotting?
Yeah, he had a run on the book where he was writing and drawing, and maybe he had... a scripting assistant. I don't really remember, but I know he had a run on the book that I enjoyed. I enjoyed it when it, I don't remember if I got it when I was coming out or if I got it in back issue bins or whatever. I think I got it when it was coming out.
Okay.
But yeah, he was plotting it. At least this issue he was plotting, and Jeff Loeb was on words, and it was a pleasant surprise. I enjoyed it more than I remember enjoying it. It was kind of it was sort of a done in one. Like reading through it, you get the sense that there's other stuff that's happened beforehand, and but for the most part, it was pretty easy to pick up and follow along without having any clue really what point in the FF's history this takes place. So it's kind of a story about Ben Grimm, who now has the ability to change from the Thing to Ben Grimm and back.
Yeah.
And he's driving off to this little town in Florida that's like this 1950s idyllic, sweet little country town. And he meets Alicia Masters there, his little love bunny, and they're hanging out there at this town. He decides to quit the Fantastic Four and hang out with Alicia for the rest of his life in Squaresville.
So is he Grimm, or is he a Thing at this point?
He starts off driving his truck as Ben Grimm, and then he decides to turn into the Thing halfway through, and then turns back to Ben Grimm later on. It kind of bounces through. It starts off at one point in time, bounces a couple of days earlier, then bounces forward. So the timeline is a little, not that it's a timeline mixed up story, but they just choose to have you go forward and backward and stuff. But apparently at this point in time in the Fantastic Four's history, he had the ability to switch back and forth from the Thing.
Seems like I vaguely remember that.
Well, I think that happened to him quite a bit throughout various points, but
just a tease kind of thing going on.
Yes. Yeah. I don't even remember. It doesn't really explain why he's got that ability or when it happened or how.
I remember him when they were on the Secret World or Secret Wars. He could do it on that planet, and that's why he didn't leave.
Right.
But as far as after that, I'm Fantastic Four is one I'm not that big on their history.
Yeah, I drop in and out of it, and I never really, I don't really follow his transformations all that carefully.
Mm-hmm.
But the kind of neat thing about this story is apparently Johnny Storm has just gone through some adventure in the Negative Zone, which has resulted in him never being able to turn off his flames. So he's kind of stuck as a flame creature and
stuck as a flamer. Oh wait, never mind.
So he's kind of like Ben Grimm was. He's permanently stuck in his.
Yeah, and they kind of play on that. So Johnny's complaining about being stuck in this monstrous form and how he just wants to be able to walk down the street and hold his girlfriend's hand. And the Thing is just standing there, kind of rolling his eyes, going, "Been there, done that."
Interesting.
Got the T-shirt. Of course, Reed constructs like a magic suit for Johnny that lets him control his flames for a little bit. And in the end, they find out that this mysterious town that the Thing has decided to live in is a town that Alicia Masters' father, the puppet master, is living in. And it's a town filled with criminals who have gone into the witness protection program, and they've all agreed to allow the puppet master to brainwash them, I think, into acting like, you know, sweet, normal, regular people. And the puppet master, in the end, the puppet master was trying to give Alicia and Ben this quiet little town that they could live in. Unfortunately, Ben kind of got a little cuckoo banana cakes with the mind washing stuff and ended up smashing the town and smashing the Fantastic Four, because they didn't really believe that he wanted to quit the Fantastic Four. Like, he kind of quit by letter instead of like face to face. So Fantastic wasn't having that. He was like, if you want to quit, you got to face me and tell me to my eyes. And in the end, everything works out, and Ben and Alicia realize that they're not in love with each other anymore, and they kind of go their separate ways. And it was a good little done in one story, and I liked it.
I remember there was a story. I want to say it was a John Byrne one that sounds very similar, where Ben and Alicia have this idyllic life, and it turns out it's a puppet master set up life. That seemed to be his MO at a certain point, was always being the guy trying to give Alicia a normal existence.
Yeah. Interesting.
Am I the only one who finds that?
What, say that again?
Am I the only one that sounds familiar to?
No, I think that's something that happened.
No, I'd have to say no, because like I said, I'm in and out on that.
I think it was Byrne too that put Johnny Storm together with Alicia. They had like a romance for a while towards the end of Byrne's run.
Yeah. Didn't she turn out to be the Skrull?
Well, yeah, I think
who hasn't been a Skrull at this point?
Now we're getting into the complicated.
Complications. There we go. Yeah. It was Fantastic Four 236. There it is, right there.
There you go.
Well, all right then.
That's fairly early in his run too, I think, in Byrne's run.
You can get it for $20 on some. Oh no, that's for the page. I'm sorry, that's for the original art. Sorry.
Oh, okay.
I was gonna say you can get the comic a whole lot cheaper than $20.
Yeah, you probably could. Wow. Oh, you can get the cover for $20. All right, sorry.
Alrighty.
That's quite all right.
I didn't realize Pacheco A was a plotter, and B, I didn't even realize he had ever done Fantastic Four. So.
Yeah, I want to say he was on the book for a year, maybe a little longer, but I enjoyed it. I was kind of wishing that he had been on the art for this issue, but the Jeff Johnson person that did the art was, you know, not bad at all. I don't know where his name. I kind of recognize the name, but I wouldn't know what else he's done. But.
I've never heard of Jeff Johnson before. He sounds like one of those made-up guys.
Wow, colored and everything.
Jeff, thank you, Comic Book DB.
There you go. Wait, maybe. I'm going to guess. Has he done a Wonder Man series, maybe? Maybe?
Yeah, if I can find the right Jeff Johnson.
Jeff Johnson.
He did.
More than one. Oh, see, there
you
go.
Man. Pulling out the... He did a lot, Jesus.
Really?
But yeah, he did Wonder Man, he did some JLA Secret Files. Generation X he did an issue of, Beavis and Butthead.
Oh, well.
He
did Beavis and Butthead, oh my.
Well, you know, from there it was all downhill. Thunderbolts, yeah, wow. So he's actually been around. I don't know the guy, but...
Well, if he does good Fantastic Four.
I guess.
Very interesting.
Mm-hmm. He wrote a comic called Drink and Draw.
Okay.
Excellent.
I can get behind that one. If I could draw, I would. I'm halfway there. Yeah, actually, that's right. He drew it in Terry Austin. Inked it, Wonder Man. Cool.
Cool.
I hated that series.
What series are you talking about?
Wonder Man.
Oh.
And I hate it because you know how they when they set a comic book in a real place, you know that place, and then the comic book it doesn't look anything like the place.
Mm-hmm.
That irritates me.
Yeah.
Wonder Man was set in Hollywood, and this was at a point when I was moving out.
Was that a limited series or a regular series?
It was a regular series.
Yeah, I actually read that. I was kind of in Avengers mode around that time.
It was it was when he had the big W on the chest, and he had the wristbands. Mm-hmm. But I just hate it. I mean, it was so stereotypical LA and and Hollywood, and just. Irritated me to that point. I just couldn't read it.
I can understand that.
took me out of the story. I couldn't suspend my disbelief. Sure, I can believe a guy was made out of ionic particles. I couldn't believe that there was that many juice bars in Los Angeles.
Sorry. Oh, wow, you're killing me, man.
Talk about it. Yeah, anyhow. All right. I guess I'm next.
All right. Chris
is probably still digging.
I got a couple.
All right.
One I bought one that I might have talked about it before. Hopefully, if I have, well, I'm going to talk about it again. But anyway, so.
This is kind of random. Okay. Well, I'm going to talk
sort
about
sort of random. I didn't say it was going to be random. I didn't say it was going to be random. It's going to be sort of random.
Oh.
Go ahead.
Well, I grabbed Legion of Superheroes 285.
285.
Oh, wait. Let me see if I can figure out which one this is. 285. Okay, hang on.
That sounds familiar.
284 was, I think, the Organis Medicus 1 blow up. So right after that is, is what? Don't tell me. Is it volleyball? No. Yeah. Is it them playing volleyball on Grand's Planet?
No, that's 286.
That's hilarious.
Oh, okay. Hold on. What comes after Timberwolf?
Oh, Super? I know which one. Okay.
Shh, don't tell me.
All right.
285.
Don't worry. Wild Horses couldn't pull it out of me.
Oh, it's that one. Night Never Falls at Nelport.
Damn. I gave it away.
You did. That was subtle.
It was sort of subtle. Not subtle enough, apparently.
There we go. Okay, go ahead. Continue.
No, you've said it all. no, this was I thought, a couple things I found interesting about this issue. First of all, I forgot how much I actually enjoyed Pat Broderick's art.
Yeah, he's good.
When he was on, he was really on. I don't know if he's still working or if he's even still alive, but his run on Legion definitely was, if not a high point, he had some really great visuals going through his issues. And this definitely had a couple good visuals. The plot is pretty simple. A few Legionnaires go to an asteroid to collect up their new ships. The asteroid is sabotaged by the Kuns or Kuns or however it's pronounced. And the five Legionnaires, Mon-El, Colossal Boy, Star Boy, Shadowlass, and Shrinking Violet, have to solve the mystery of who's sabotaging it, and that's the whole story, basically. But once again, showing how cool and incompetent all at the same time that Colossal Boy is, because he is cool and incompetent. But one of the standout things about this issue is the backup. Come on, you guys. You know what the backup was.
Oh, it was the Dream Girl one.
Yes, and what's significant about this one?
Keith Giffen, first one.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, seems like I remember that.
Yeah, and it's the one where she uses the power ring in that interesting way by having it affect something outside of her.
Totally.
Oh, yeah.
That's the short story that got her elected leader. Totally.
Oh, it wasn't the ballot stuffing? Come on.
What? No. No.
No.
But if they were stuffing, wait a minute.
They were stuffing ballots because this issue was – that story was great.
Did I miss something? Somebody got elected leader? Maybe I'm behind on my Legion.
Not yet.
1985.
Oh, okay. I thought you were talking about present.
83.
82.
Yeah,
82. Cover date March of 82, in fact.
I tried to look up Pat Broderick on the Comic Book DB, but they don't have anything on him.
Really?
Mm-hmm. No bio or anything.
Ooh, he is off the grid.
Well,
I haven't done a wiki search for him yet, but
it's a pretty basic issue. There's nothing standout, but it really highlighted how Paul Levitz was always running with the A, B, and C plots going on. And it was a little less subtle back then because he would take his B plot and put it as an actual backup story. He would actually pull it out. and drop it in as its own individual story, mm-hmm. Which was kind of neat. But you can see where he constantly had something going on. In fact, in the backup, in the letters page, the editor, Mike Barr, of all people.
Yeah.
He lists out all the different storylines that are going on because someone complains that there doesn't seem to be enough going on in the book, and he lists out and said, well, the subplots that are going on right now involve Saturn Girl, Lightning Land, Chameleon Boy, Colossal Boy, Bringing Eggfly, Shrinking Violet, Mono, Light Last, Princess Projector, Karate Kid, Shadowlass, Timberwolf, and a couple of villains and a supporting character or two. So kind of says, you know what? You may not think there's a lot going on, but if you read, you know, individual panels, there's little moments going on all over the place. And it really points to the fact that Paul Levitz has got his shit together constantly.
Totally. Although, to be fair, that letter writer was probably complaining about the issues just before Levitz, because Levitz would have been only on the book. He would have only been on for an issue or two or three at this point.
Oh, and you're right. It absolutely. There's a letter in here that wishes Roy Thomas a nice goodbye.
Yeah.
So yeah, because 290 was, I think 290 or 291 was Roy Thomas's last issue, and here we are at 280 or 281 was.
Yeah.
During the Reflecto, say it with me.
Saga.
Saga.
Yeah, and actually, I had forgotten how I may have to dig that out too, because I don't have fond memories of it, but it probably.
What?
I know. Come on.
I read it every year.
Read what every year?
The Reflecto Saga.
Oh, I need to do that. Yeah. Get to them.
Twas the night. Okay, kids, gather around the hearth. We're going to read the Reflecto Saga again.
What issues is that?
Well. It starts 275 when one of the Legionnaires gets killed in quotation marks. Then you wait a couple of issues, you go through the funeral, you go through the space pirate stuff when that Legionnaire turns into a space pirate with the sexy space pirate leader. Mm-hmm. Then in about when does Grimbor come back? There's like a three issue Grimbor the Chainsman storyline with Reflecto, and then you have the Who is Reflecto part of the story, which is like 280, 281, 282. So 280, go back through. 277 is when it starts, officially. Wow.
Reflecto is the favorite character of only one user on Comic Book DB, by the way.
What? And that's not even me, so there's at least two of us out there. Right.
That's hilarious.
Did I say 275 was when the character was killed off? No, it was earlier. It was 272, I think.
He's not even a character.
270? No, but the character who becomes Reflecto gets killed off. I'm not going to reveal it. It's like,
got those issues on Comic DB.
God forbid spoiling something from 30 years ago.
Shh, you're making me feel old.
No, or 31 years ago. God, I was getting these issues. I think they were part of my subscription service.
Oh, I did that for a while.
I never did that. I was always the go to the spinner rack every week, see what's out, grab it, wait my 4 weeks.
Unfortunately, the Reflecto Saga has not made its way to Comixology.
No.
Not very much Legion has.
I'm surprised, too, just looking at it. But.
Yeah, I would have thought they would have cleaned up with Legion on Comixology, but...
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there's issues with scanning it or whatever they have to do to make it go from booky form to digital form.
Yeah, but I bet if you look that historically there's not a lot of Avengers on there either, and there's probably not a lot of Justice League. I mean,
there's a ton of back stock that they could start. That could be someone's job at DC and Marvel, just going through their back stock and mm-hmm. getting it digitized, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, Peter Sanderson has something to do again. So
there you go. All righty.
Oh, so that was one of the ones I ran again. Random. I mean, it was. I reached into my one of my seven shirt boxes, and that was what came out. Yes. And so Broderick steps up, and again, it's Levitz. It's early Levitz. Again, Mike Barr, I didn't realize, I mean, I guess I knew he was an editor at one point, but of course I always think of him as Batman writer.
Yeah.
Batman and the Outsiders as well.
Right on.
Okay, there you go. Somebody should be writing these down, because we should put a list on.
All right. You going to get that?
Yeah, give me. What was that issue number again on Fantastic Four?
45 or 474.
And that was from 2001, sorry.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Okay. Go ahead, Chris.
Oh, it's my turn?
Yeah,
oh, you're still working on it? Okay.
Go ahead.
Well, I pulled one we probably have talked about back when Comixology was first getting this digital thing going. They put out a free serial called Box 13. And it was written by David Gallagher. Oh, crap. And I clicked on it to read it. I was trying to read who wrote it. Back up here. Anyway, it was like a weekly thing they did for a while, but it was David Gallagher and Steve Ellis. Let's see, description was a reimagining of the popular radio serial Box 13. Follows the harrowing adventures of author Dan Holliday as he unlocks a clue to his past and his very identity. It's interesting. I don't think I ever finished it, but I've got it all in here. And then they put a sequel out. And the first couple issues are free. I think they charged after that, but anyway, it was like 99 cents. So it was one of their first things that they did. It was before DC even signed on, and I think they had just little, mostly independent stuff. But it's actually a pretty good series. I need to finish it now that.
What's the concept?
Basically, it's one of them kind of a conspiracy theory thing, but this is, I'll read the rest of it. Investigative author Dan Holliday has spent the last several years of his life researching the secrets behind the MK Ultra project. His latest book has brought him a degree of notoriety around the country and around the world, and during his recent book tour, Dan discovers something that will change his life forever. Join him as he learns what lurks inside Box 13. So anyway, this box shows up. And it's got like a number on it, and he opens it up, and then all of a sudden he starts seeing flashbacks, and it's like several hours later, and it's just kind of weird. It's an interesting story though.
Now, was this the collection, or was this an individual issue?
It was an individual issue. I'm looking back here. David Gallagher is a Harvey Award winning writer between High Moon and. I guess it won the Box 13 won it too. He's worked on Deadlands, The Devil's Gun, and which comes out in June from Image. And there's a couple other things: Only Living Boy, Immortals, Gods and Heroes, a couple other things here. But yeah, it's kind of like a spy intrigue kind of thing. And these boxes keep showing up, and it's interesting. I think the number one is actually free.
The cover's really nice. I like the use of the red.
Yeah, it's really good, and they do that a lot. They kind of do like a Sin City kind of thing, where most of it's kind of got a black and white quality, and then certain things are full color, or like red. But like the numbers on the box or whatever will show that. It's not very long, but it's the first issue anyway. But the art was really good. I liked it. It kept me coming back.
So. How many issues was it? I mean,
in the first one there's 14. No, actually there is 13. I take that back. Or was there a special or something? No, yeah, it was 13 issues. Yeah.
No, 17. No, 5. No.
Scrolling through. Oh wait, there was a half issue, 6.5. So there was 14 issues altogether. Yeah, the 6.5 was the Christmas special. Yeah, so there's a 6.5 in there. So, yeah, there was 14 issues. I think they were like a buck a piece, and kind of what they're doing with Batman Beyond and the other stuff, the Legends of the Dark Knight book. So it's good stuff.
Legends of the Dark Knight in Smallville and...
Yeah. Yeah, I'm behind on Legends of the Dark Knight, but I never did read Smallville because I still haven't read the watched the series yet. I love it. But anyway, yeah, that's what's going on there.
Easy to catch up on that.
Yeah, it's an interesting little thing. You know, if you have OCD, it's not very long, so you can read it really quick and continue.
That's definitely one of the nice things about the books that are digital exclusive. They're cheap, A, and B, they tend to be, you know, they tend to be quick but filled reads. Like we were saying with the Monkey Brain books, they, you know, oh yeah, they're only 14 pages, but they feel very dense.
Yeah. You get a good story.
So that's what it sounds like you're getting from this from the Box 13 book is
yeah.
is quick, but you get enough content for your literally your buck.
Right, and they put out a sequel to it called Box 13: The Pandora Process. I bought all the issues, but I have yet to read them.
Jeez.
So something to look forward to.
When you buy your house, you will sit down and read.
Yeah, well, you know. be able to download them a lot quicker.
You're going to set up your own internet.
Yes, as fast as possible. I'll take all of it, please. Anyway.
You want to give me how many megs?
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, that's mine.
Well, that's going way off the reservation, man. That's cool.
What the hell? Pardon me.
Ooh.
Clicked on something and a video started running.
Excellent.
Sorry about that, folks.
It sounded like one of those Need a Date videos.
I was looking at the local internet company. I was going to see how fast they do actually have things. So anyway, go ahead.
Alrighty. Well, the next one that I picked was kind of random, but not totally random. But it was from one of my short boxes. I had just read Threshold this Wednesday, so I wanted to go back and read Legion 89. So I grabbed the first issue of Legion 89 from 1989.
Wow.
Yes, by Keith Giffen and Alan Grant and Barry Kitson and Mike DiCarlo.
Very nice.
Yeah, you know, I was expecting I was going to be blown away by it. I haven't reread this series in so long, and I remember loving it when it was coming out, and the first issue is good. It didn't blow me away, but it was good. Like it was good. There was lots of story in it. It was pretty dense, and since I didn't reread Invasion before I picked this up, I was kind of going in cold, other than knowing that, you know, there's been an invasion. Various alien races have been put together on a prison planet. Like, they kind of recap Invasion a little bit, but I don't know. I guess they give you what you need to know, right? Like, these guys are going home from being on a prison planet, and almost right away, Doc starts manipulating them and has them crash on his home planet, and bam, they're already into taking down the computer tyrants of Kalu by the end of the first issue.
So who do we get in number one? Obviously we get Dox and Stealth, but who else was there?
Yeah, you get Dox, you get Stealth, you get Strata, Garen Beck, the Derlin, and Larissa Malor. Those are the six main characters at this point.
Does Beck have the hair, the tall
you
hair?
You know what? They all kind of do at this point. Like, that's sort of that flat top buzzy thing, and Larissa Malor has kind of got the same sort of style, just not quite as pointy on the ends. And even Doc's at this point, this is before he gets his buzz cut, so his hair is kind of it's not really Garen Beck style, but mm-hmm. but there's lots of those flat tops going around here in this book.
That's funny.
Thank you, MC Hammer. All right.
Yes. There you go. It's you know what? There's a lot that happens in the book. It's everyone gets a chance to kind of show their stuff. Each of the characters, you get a sense of who they're, or at least what role they're going to fill on the team, right? So Stealth, even though we don't know her powers, we know that she's some mysterious creature who. Like when the computer they introduce all the characters by having the computer tyrants of Kalu do like a little computer background check on each of the characters. So it's kind of at like a page, and it's a quick way to get to know the characters. And with Stealth, all they are able to say is unknown. We don't know anything about this creature. We don't know whether it's male or female or what. Where she's completely unknown. So she doesn't do anything with her powers, but you get the sense that she's a mysterious creature and she's a bit of a cranky badass, and Beck is the whiner, and Strata is kind of stoic and the tough strong dude, and Larissa Mallor's the voice of reason, and Docs is the sneaky bugger that's pulling the strings. The Durlin tends to have a little bit of personality. He's like, he's kind of got a bit of a jokey personality, I think. And
the Durlin?
A little bit. Like he's not the quiet sort of. He seems to have a little more personality than I remember Durlin's having. Like he's a little, and I mean he's not in the series all that terribly long, but he's got spunk.
I don't remember him having any personality, but again, it's been since the series came out that I probably read it. So
yeah.
I never did read that series.
Oh, it's a good one.
I've been wanting to pick it up though.
Yeah, like the first issue. I don't know. It's a good solid first issue, but mm-hmm. from here on out, from what I remember, every issue in that first year of its publication had like a big cliffhanger at the end of every issue, and there was a big twist, and there was a shock, like you learned something new about a character, or a surprising guest star showed up, or like every issue was like bam surprise boom boom. It kept you guessing all the way through that first year.
Interesting.
Well, Giffen knew. I mean, I think Giffen at his heart of heart knew that the series had pretty much no chance of survival unless he just, you know, unless he threw everything against the wall.
Right, yes. Right.
It was the unlikely spinoff from Invasion.
And yeah. that's the other neat thing. Like, going through the book, like, Marvel had no house ads, but this book has got a ton of stuff advertised. Hang on. And like, from a lot of classic like creators that you remember as being part of DC, but being part of DC like in the 70s, but they're still kicking around in the 80s. Like there's a Blackhawk miniseries. No, it's a series. So Martin Pasco's writing a Blackhawk series illustrated by Rick Burchett maybe. Anyway, and this is like 89. Mm-hmm. Martin Pasco is still doing work for DC, and they're doing the Phantom series. And what else is popping up? I kind of remember the Phantom series. I never really followed it. The Huntress is getting her own book by Joe Staton and Joey Cavalieri, and Bob Rozakis is doing Heroes for Hire. Justice League Europe is just starting. The New Gods are getting their own book again by Mark Evanier, Jim Starlin. So, like, there's a ton of stuff coming out of DC at this point. Like, just a ton. It's neat. It's a cool It's a cool little series. And I had completely forgotten that Mike DiCarlo was inking this book. I don't know how long he sticks around.
Well, Kitson, how long did Kitson stick around on it? I don't think he didn't stick around for a ton of issues.
I think he did. I think he took like a little break, a 6 or 7 month break at some point in the series, but then he came back and he was like writing and illustrating the series for a while.
Oh, you know what? I'm thinking of Travis Charest over on what was that? Dark Stars. Yeah, sorry, I'm confusing the two, but not barely. I apologize to Mr. Kitson.
Yeah, I want to say Kitson was on through issue 50, maybe. Yeah, there you go. So a good solid start to the series, I think. I don't know, I was remembering it as being more of a wild ride, but I mean, it's still very good. It gives you a ton of DC history. It gives you, like, what happened on Kalu, and it gives you a little bit of the Brainiac history post-crisis, and it's a good.
It's so interesting when you look at the listing on Comic Book DB, they put the 1989 in parentheses. it's just, you know, it's LEGION.
Right, yeah.
And then in parentheses, 1989, as opposed to it being part of the title, which it definitely was in the.
Oh, yeah, because they would change it every year. Legion 89, Legion 90, 91.
Did they? Oh, good.
Yeah, I think
they did. I think they did, yeah.
Oh, good. They
kept updating it, I think, right up until the end, I think.
That cover, he's got that Wolverine haircut going on, isn't he?
Yes.
That is classic. Hey, come join me and you can go screw yourself covers. Okay.
Wow. Okay. All right then.
Wow. I'm having, flashback to apparently 1989.
Well, all right then.
I wasn't dating yet, Imelda, at that point. Just a little bit later. Okay.
Gotcha.
Sorry. Okay. All right. Well, I'm going to continue to take us back to the 80s. Again, random pick out of the box. This is from 1985. With some awesome house ads, by the way. Including a Legion of Substitute Heroes house ad is stuck in here. And I've got Sword of the Atom special, number 2.
That's
right.
Was that still Gil Kane on the art?
Was still Gil Kane on the art. Jan Strand was... Stranad, or however it's pronounced.
Yeah.
I actually don't know how that's pronounced. Strnad. So I'm saying Strand, but that could be wrong.
Yeah.
It's got an interesting spelling, but it's a follow-up, a second follow-up to the hit miniseries from whatever year that was. The Conanization of Ray Palmer. Or maybe more John Carter. I don't know. Maybe more John Carter. But it is a follow up. This is the story where Jean Loring and her now husband Paul, the lawyer, end up coming down to the Amazon because Jean has been shrunk down inadvertently while digging through some of Ray Palmer's stuff. And they had the only person who can get her back up to size is going to be Ray Palmer. So they So they go down there, and she coincidentally gets kidnapped by the same tribe that kidnaps Ray Palmer's wife, whatever her name was.
That's hilarious.
Lathwin, maybe?
Lathwin, yes. Yep, I'm looking at it right now. Lathwin and... Ray Palmer and Paul have to team up to try and save their women. And at the end of the story, Paul, the formerly jerk, now kind of cool guy, hangs on to the belt, and there's that hint that perhaps we're going to see a new Adam at some point, which of course never ended up happening, but that was, would have been kind of cool. And again, awesome Gil Kane art.
Oh, I mean, yes.
Just amazing stuff. He has his own version of the Kirby Crackle going on throughout this whole thing, which is would put Kirby to shame, some of it. And his machine design, he did all the art on this. I mean, he did the inking. Looks like, he didn't do the coloring on it, but he did his own inking on it. And Alan Gold, of all people, was the editor on this.
Which issue was this again?
This was Sword of the Atom Special, number 2.
Oh, yeah. I got the trade of all that, I think.
Yeah.
That's a great book.
Oh, it was a great, you know, ongoing thing. Well, you know what? They should have stopped here. Number 3 was not.
Number 3 was terrible.
Yeah, it was not. It didn't live up to the level of the miniseries and the 2 previous specials.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
But I think some of the things, I mean, again, it's the story itself is cool, and the reading it's just fun stuff. But some of the, like, Murray was looking at some of the house ads from that last issue from Legion 89. But, mm-hmm. Amazing Heroes, their top 10 books for 1984. I love this. Swamp Thing, John Sable, American Flag, Teen Titans, Fantastic Four, X-Men, Blue Devil, Atari Force, Doctor Strange, and Power Pack.
Wow.
The 84 was quite the diverse year. There's a Meanwhile column in here, but again, the great, you got to see this Legion of Substitute Heroes ad. I may scan it in. It's pure funny. It's got the picture of the cover of all of them, the GIF and drawing, and then it's got a little note paperclip to it from the sales department to Dick Giordano saying, you really expect to get people to pay for this?
That's funny.
It is funny. I think it's funny. Fun stuff. But some of it is just about looking at some of the what was going on, else was going on in 84, 85. So, anyhow, if John Carter, Warlord of Mars movie was not your cup of tea, grab this. This will fill that gap that was left by that movie.
Yeah, tiny warrior people riding frogs.
And frogs and birds.
How can you go wrong?
I know.
I'm telling you.
Oh, God, this cover is freaking... I would love to own this original piece of art from this cover. It's got Ray Palmer in his Sword of Atom outfit with the mask still and the necklace and the belt. And there's a yellow warrior coming at him riding a bird. They're both holding their swords up, ready to kill each other.
Wow.
Can't do it justice.
Yeah, Gil Kane is one of those artists that got better and better and better as he got older, I think.
Oh, I agree. He's one of those guys where it's like, if you go back in time, it's like, oh, God, I don't, another Gil Kane, I hate to see this crap. And then you pick up these later issues, you're absolutely right. Wow, he was around for ever.
Yeah.
Marvel and DC and Independence and, oh my God. He had quite the history. Quite the history. He was all the way back in the early 70s is how long this guy was working for. Good for him. Yeah. And unfortunately he passed away in 2000, just FYI.
Oh, yeah, that's too bad.
January 31st, 2000. He was from Latvia.
Latvia?
Really?
Where Dr. Doom's in charge?
Yes, Chris, where Dr. Doom was in charge.
Okay, just making sure. Okay. I want to know, make sure I got my countries right. So.
Yeah, no, he was under the evil dictatorship of Dr. Victor Von Doom.
Oh, wow.
That explains why he never, ever drew any Fantastic Four comics.
Yeah. It probably would have banned him from home. Something happened to his parents or something, you know?
Yeah.
Terrible.
My God, you're right. He didn't do any Fantastic Four.
No.
That's hilarious.
That's... Wow, he really didn't.
Now, I wonder if he did... there was like a Doctor Doom series in... Not a series, what was it called? The Supervillain Team-Up. Doctor Doom was in that one. Maybe Gil Kane did some of those. But then Doctor Doom was kind of like the hero, so maybe that's okay then. Mm-hmm. If you're drawing the ruler of your country as a hero, maybe then you're allowed to get away with it.
Yeah, no, it doesn't look like he drew any supervillain team-up either.
No, alrighty then. See, he's Doctor Doom-free.
Yeah, but you know what he did draw? You know what he did draw? He drew during the death of Captain Stacy and Gwen Stacy.
Oh, really now? That sounds interesting.
He's got blood on his hands.
That Roy Thomas writer, I think, on that. So
that's hilarious.
Yeah, Gil Kane is the one who drew the snap.
Cool.
Who actually killed Gwen Stacy? Was it the Green Goblin or was it Peter Parker? We'll never know. Okay, sorry. Off on a tangent. Of course. My fault.
Are you on a tangent? No.
I know. It's unbelievable, and I promise never, ever to do it again.
Yeah, okay, whatever. I don't believe that.
And if you believe that... No, sorry. That was going to go off on a tangent. See? Jesus. Can't even...
You're killing me, Smalls.
Your turn.
All right. What do we got? And I'm sure I've talked about this several times, but, you know, we're going to do it again. For some reason, I keep coming back to it. It is the Flash number 54, and it's like in the 80s. But it is written by...
No, don't say it. Don't say it.
Okay.
Well, let me guess. Mark Waid.
No, you're wrong.
No!
You get wrong this time. That was right before Wade took over, as a matter of fact.
Mesner Loebs.
Yes, Mesner Loebs. Pencils by Greg LaRocque, which I've always liked. And this is, you know, one of my favorite Wally West ones, I would imagine. Issues. But basically, he's on a plane, which is odd in itself. But this is around the time... Metagene things going on, you know. It's like not too long after Invasion, I think, real close to it. And he's on a plane, and these terrorists decide to, you know, to attack. And during the attack, one of them blows a hole in the top of the plane, and it sucks out a stewardess. And he just says, you know. The name of the story is Nobody Dies. And he basically jumps out of the plane to save her. He had no plan whatsoever. And he catches up with her and he figures it out. He uses his, you know, powers to, you know, and they, he, fig- you know, basically they fall for a while and he just keeps going and figures out how to save them both. It's an awesome issue.
So the whole issue basically takes place during the fall. Is that
most of it, the majority of it. There's some stuff that happens in the beginning that kind of setting up that the deal about the terrorists and everything else. He might be on the plane. Oh, that's what it is. The terrorist he captured. It was somewhere where he stopped the terrorists. He was actually on the plane to help escort them to wherever, and I guess they were trying to, the terrorists were trying to get their leader out, and that's why they were on, it was on the plane, so yeah.
Was it Cobra, or wasn't that Cobra, or whatever?
I don't know, some bunch that was against people with the Metagene, or they wanted the Metagene, you know, and, but anyway, so yeah, it's a really interesting issue. I just got through rebuying it, but anyway.
So this is right after Invasion as well, like when
it's real close to it. Yeah.
Cool.
I mean, I don't know. I must have read this issue about 30 times, something like that. So.
I'm sure I had this issue. I'm looking at it, I'm like, I know I had it at one point.
Yeah, it was something about it just really, really grabbed me. So, usually when I talk about, you know, why I like superhero comics, this is the issue, one of the issues I think of. It's usually on first of my list.
Good choice.
Pardon me.
Totally gives the if I remember the free fall part of the issue,
mm-hmm.
it shows how the whole Flash mind works, where, you know, yeah. for the rest of us, it takes about, you know, it takes 3 minutes. For him, mm-hmm. it's eternity, the whole fall.
Yeah. But, yeah, and it's like he's, like, trying to – he misses her is because, you know, he has that – that's when he had that the whole thing with the aura to cut down on – that stops the friction, you know, and everything like that. So it was keeping him from – he just zipped right by her instead, like, you know, normal free fall would be. And it's – he's, like, trying to figure out. And luckily she has – you know, this one is metabolism. You know, he has to eat a lot because of his metabolism. And she happened to have peanuts in her pocket because, you know, she's a stewardess. And so she's feeding him peanuts. I'm just flipping through the issue on the web right now. So, yeah, it's a great
– that peanut allergy.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good thing. But anyway.
I can't save you.
So, yeah. Because he was tiring out. Because basically he was just sitting there running in place trying to slow their descent down. And that's when he realized he hadn't eaten in 12 hours. And it's like she just gave him the peanuts. And it's cool. That's back when his identity was public. So.
What happened with that? How did that go? How did his identity go from being public to not public?
They did a deal. That's when Hal was the Spectre, Johns was writing it then.
They did a Mephisto.
Yes, exactly. That's the word I was looking for. They did a Mephisto, and he just basically just like, oh, everybody forgot, and even he forgot for a while. It was interesting arc during that time. So, anyway.
I can dig
good
it.
Good stuff. Good stuff.
All right. Good choice.
Thank you.
Again, I would have said Wade. My bad.
Yeah. Not quite, though.
My bad.
Nice try.
I sold you short, man.
No, that's okay. So, anyway.
Excellent. Alrighty, my last book. I reached into my Vertigo box, and it was my independent box, but it came from Vertigo, but it doesn't really have the Vertigo feel to it. Anyway, it is called My Faith in Frankie, number one.
My Faith in Frankie, huh?
Yeah, it was like a miniseries they put out in 2004.
Okay, I'm definitely going to have to look that one up.
Oh, it is a good one. I liked it when I bought it, but I loved rereading it. It is so funny. Like, it is hilarious. I loved it. It was written by Mike Carey, illustrated by Sonny Liu and Mark Hempel, and it just made me laugh and laugh.
Hmm.
And laugh. It's real. Like, if you've read any of.
Oh, okay.
Read
any trade book, even.
Yeah, they've got it out in trade. I think they've got it out in, like, a little black and white pocketbook sort of trade format, maybe.
Hmm. Interesting.
It would fit in perfectly with the Minx line that they used to put out. It would fit in with Oni Press's books like Blue Monday or Hopeless Savages or any of their little character pieces or whatever. It's really good. It's about this young 17-year-old girl named Frankie who is, you know, she's 17. She's ready to date. She wants to get busy with the boys. And every time she tries to, you know, get a little close to a boy, every time she tries to kiss them or you know, get into their pants or whatever, something happens. So, like, her first boyfriend was bitten by a raccoon, and then her next boyfriend gets a nosebleed, and then
That's interesting.
Her third boyfriend gets his foot stuck in the floorboard of the car, and then some boyfriend gets amnesia, and then her very last boyfriend, there's like this rabbit attack. They're making out in his car, and rabbits start falling out of the sky.
Hmm.
They just sit on the car and stare at them while she's trying to get a little further, and the boyfriend is like, yeah, I'm not into this. I feel like this is just a little bit uncomfortable having this audience, so I'm sorry. We're done.
All right, then.
Yes, and as the story goes on, you learn that Frankie throughout her life has had, like, she's blessed. Like, she's like a top student. She wins all the games she plays. She nothing ever goes wrong for her. And she tells everyone it's because she's got God on her side. And in fact, she actually does. She has a God on her side. She's got this little God called Jerevan. And he's been up in Godland where all the gods live, and no one worships him anymore, so he's a bit of a nerd, and everyone kind of kicks him around, and he leaves Godland, he comes down to Earth just when Frankie is born, and he realizes that she's got faith in him, and so he's like her guardian god, and he sticks around her all the time, and he makes everything go perfect in her life, except, of course, for this boyfriend thing, because he's getting just a little bit jealous. He wants nothing to do, like he wants Frankie all to himself. Oh, and then I almost forgot. She had this one little friend as she was growing up named Dean. They were out riding in a boat, Dean and Frankie and her friend named Kay, I think. Yeah, they were riding in a boat. A big, like, supersonic ship kind of crashes into their canoe, and they almost all drown. The god saves Frankie and saves Kay and forgets about Dean. Dean drowned. Whoops. They're still like 7 or 8. And Frankie at this point has got the god wrapped around her finger. So she's like, nope, you got to bring him back. And Jerevan's like, oh, I'm not so sure that's a good plan. But Frankie's like, nope, bring him back. So Dean gets brought back to life right in the middle of the funeral.
Bless you.
Pardon that.
And at the end of the story, we meet... we see the girls, they're going off to college, and they see that Dean is at the college that the two girls have applied for, and so that, you know, that totally is the deciding factor about what college to go to. Of course, you go to the college where your dead boyfriend is hanging out, and...
Yeah, of course. Makes perfect sense.
You don't worry about course calendars or professors. If your dead boyfriend is there, that's the college you go to. Anyway, and way up in the clouds, you've got Jerevan watching, and he's like, he's not happy about this. I don't know if I'm doing it justice, but it's really, the artwork is beautiful. It's told with so much humor. Like, each character has got this really strong voice. Like, you get the sense that you know Frankie. She's this character that can do whatever she wants. She's totally used to having people do anything she wants. They bow to her. She won't take no for an answer. Like, she's got it all, and her friend is sort of the quiet, sort of mousy character, and the way they tell the story, like, it's told in like little bite-sized chapters of 2 or 3 pages, and they intersperse throughout the chapters. Kay, the friend, she fills in the past, so she kind of tells stories of the past, but she does it in this sort of like cartoon version, so it's like she's writing these newspaper cartoons, and it's really, really funny. It seems really, really funny.
Those chapters seem really suited. If Mark Hempel is drawing separately from the regular artist, those would be really good for him to do. But it looks like he's inking rather than drawing.
I think he's the inker, yeah, yeah. But it's, oh my gosh. After reading the first issue, I'm totally digging in to get the rest of the issues out. And I'm going to read them all.
Now, conceptually, it sounds like something I would love to share with my 10-year-old, but there's also, it sounds like there's some more adult themes going on in there that maybe I would not.
Yeah,
so there's definitely some swearing.
Well, I can dig at the swearing. It's the sex.
Alrighty, well,
book list lists it as grades 9 to 12, but it doesn't sound like that from what you were saying.
Yeah, well, I mean, I would even, I would probably have my grades 7 and 8. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it would be awful. Yeah. Let me see, the first page, well, the second page you have Frankie, like, climbing right on top of her boyfriend of the moment.
And then we're done. And we're done.
Okay. Yeah, that's a little much for your...
I don't want to have to explain that.
Yeah.
No.
Exactly. I don't blame you. I wouldn't either.
Give her a couple of years.
Mm-hmm. At least.
It's tough enough when we're watching Lord of the Rings, she says Strider is hot. And I'm like, no.
Oh, man. That's funny.
I have to leave the room now.
That's funny.
Daddy can't take it.
I haven't seen The Hobbit.
Well, my faith in Frankie. Okay, I'm. What is the? I understand the Frankie part of the title. Why is it my faith in Frankie?
Well, that's what he was. She had said that, you know, she had faith about the gods or something like that. Wasn't that it?
Yeah, I
he
think
faith in him. But
yeah, I think the god. I think. Well, it can be taken a whole lot of ways. I think. Like, is it? Is it Jerevan's faith that Frankie's going to make the right choice, which is him, or is it her friends? They have faith in Frankie, or yeah, there's so many ways you can take it. But I think generally it's supposed to be Jerevan is hoping that Frankie is going to make the right choice, which will lead to her to him. And I don't totally remember the ending, but the ending is. The ending is great from what I remember. Like it's a bit of a twist on the guy gets girl gets guy sort of thing. And I think I'm pretty sure it's a satisfyingly twisted ending.
What was Vertigo? It was at the height of when Mike Carey was doing Lucifer. So I can see. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was just looking that up with the stuff he did.
Oh yeah. His Lucifer run was awesome.
Yeah, he's done a ton of stuff. Like, is he still over at Marvel right now? Is he doing anything at Marvel right now?
I have no idea what he's working on right now. He left X-Men a couple years ago, though.
Yeah, I was seeing he did some of those that stuff.
You know, I'm trying to remember when he left X-Men, but it's been a couple years since he was off that book.
Let's see, there's his website, MikeCarey.net.
Do 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 do
mixtape. That's from 2011. He's a great writer, though, I'll tell you. He honestly, he took on a very difficult task, which was to write the Lucifer character that Gaiman had. It's so interesting.
Yeah.
Just saying.
He's still doing Unwritten, I think, for DC, isn't he? Isn't he the one?
Yeah.
Gary and Peter Gross? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, well, there you go.
There you go. He's still actively involved in something.
I'm sure he's got stuff Hollywood-ish going on.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, I hate to end mine on a kind of a low note, but... my last random pick was All-Star Squadron number 65.
Wow.
Huh.
Late in the run, when they were just killing time. This was 1986, so it was... they were just filling issues until the series got officially canceled to move over to Young All-Stars. But this was the origin of Johnny Quick.
Oh, really?
Oh, cool.
Whoa. Jesus.
All right, then. What was that? You okay, man?
Good lord. Hold on 1 second. Vamp for a second.
Okay.
I think there's like a big drum solo going on at the Caleb household.
Yeah, I think so.
Jesus.
A rock band.
What happened, man?
I have no idea, and I'm probably better off not knowing.
Okay.
Somebody got the cymbals out.
That's fine. Wow.
Yeah, so this was Roy Thomas writing it, doing his history thing that he loved to do at this point, drawn by not one of my favorites, Don Heck.
What?
Don't wet me. Basically, Roy Thomas reinterpreting the origin of Johnny Quick that was originally done by Mort Weisinger, everyone's favorite jackass from the early years. And I don't know. It's hokey. It's pure Roy Thomas 80s. I don't know what else to say. It's just, you know, Johnny Quick was the Flash fill-in when they couldn't, you know, when they weren't using the Flash from Justice Society from Earth 2. This is, you know, pre-crisis or just during crisis, and they're kind of just filling us in on these characters. He uses his little formula, runs super fast. Yeah. Actually, post-crisis, because there's a house ad for Legends in here, actually.
Yeah.
Hey, I didn't realize that Secret Origins of Phantom Stranger is crossover. I don't know what to tell you. It was okay. I mean, I read it. I was underwhelmed. Johnny Quick was always a personal favorite of mine. Roy Thomas made him an interesting character, even though I didn't really, you know, I kind of fell off of my All-Star Squadron love a year or so ago. I don't know what else to tell you. It was a great fill-in issue, you know, just killing time again until they canceled the series.
Okay.
Whoa.
Oh, you all right there?
Sound like somebody had a gas attack.
I'm fine.
Excellent.
Okay.
What else to say here? I'm sorry, I don't mean to end on a low note. I have all the issues of All-Star Squadron because in my heart of hearts, I enjoyed the series, even though I didn't really enjoy the Showcase collection. Mm-hmm. I'm done.
Well, all right, then.
86 was a good year. It was the year I graduated from high school. What else?
86, that's when I turned 16 and got a car.
Oh.
Look at that. Byrne was still on Superman in Action. Marv Wolfman and Jerry Ordway were still on Adventures of Superman. They were actually starting right then.
Yeah.
Donna Troy was still Wonder Girl.
Who? Wonder Girl.
Who?
They had a very cool Demon miniseries by Matt Wagner going on.
Matt Wagner.
I do remember that one. I still got that one hanging around in one of the boxes.
Matt Wagner's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Again, these house ads are doing it for me almost more than the actual issues.
What was it? I need to get that. They got his stuff in Omnibus now. Grendel. Yeah, I want to get all that. Those Omnibuses. You still there?
Hello? Yep, totally.
Okay. I thought I lost you. I didn't hear any background noise. I thought I went dead.
No. We're slowly putting our house back together. I still don't know quite what that was, but now what was that? A pan.
A lemon bun cake.
A lemon bun cake. Ooh, they're making lemon bun cake here.
Sweet.
No kidding. You got to put all that frosting on it, right, Mel?
Yeah.
Yes.
I guess. She's turned shy all of a sudden.
Okay. All right, mine will be hold on a second. If I can get the actual thing up, link up. Okay, fine. Be that way.
Bam.
Comic book comics by the Evil Twin Comics, I believe, is the one.
Oh, yeah.
And basically, it's like it was by Fred Van Lente and Ryan Dunleave. Number zero is the one I'm pulling up here. It's like seven pages, but it's a good segue into the others. And basically it is a comic drawn and written history of comic books. Mm-hmm. With all the dirty laundry that you can even imagine. It's good stuff. How, you know, comics got started, the little bitty things here and there. Anyway, it's good stuff. I'm looking at the first one and talking about how the crime comics and came to be, and the other ones I've read, you know, talk about Jack Kirby and the stuff that goes on there, and but yeah, it's an interesting little thing here, and a lot of seedy little things that you didn't know about, especially about the crime comics.
Hey, I'm a big Van Lente fan. I'm really the guy just cannot do any wrong lately. So I'm gonna go ahead and buy these. I'm absolutely.
I got them all, but I haven't finished reading them all yet. But yeah, I read that, and I think it was Paul French talked about them on the Legion podcast, I believe. And I read the first one. Well, the first one is free, if I'm not mistaken. It's zero, of course, it's only seven pages. But once you read it, and it's like, okay, I got to read the rest of this. And it's a really good series.
Is it zero issue?
Yeah, I just sent the link to it.
Huh.
Now Murray Van Lente is one of your countrymen, right?
I think so.
What is he? Van Lente, he's doing something for. What is he doing? Oh, he's doing Archer and Armstrong. That's what he's reading. That's what he's writing right now.
And he's going to write G.I. Joe here in a few weeks.
Okay, well, that's lovely.
He's writing it there? Like in Arizona?
No, be a. God, whatever.
Oh, you can get the comic book history of comics as one collection for $12, $11.99 instead of getting the single issues, depending on what you want to do.
Gotcha.
I just found it.
He's American.
He's American.
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 Yep.
Yeah, he is American.
Yeah, so at $2 per issue, you can get all seven for $14. Or you said how much for the collection?
$11.99.
Actually, it's $12 for all the issues. I'm sorry. Yeah. So it's the same price whether you buy the
same price one or the other. Yeah, okay, that's cool. But yeah, it's really good. I think I've read the four out of them. But yeah, it's good stuff. And I'm looking through his stuff that he's written, and he's got a lot of Marvel / Spider-Man stuff. So.
Maybe he's not Canadian because he did Alpha Flight.
Right.
Right.
Sorry.
Honorary.
But anyway, that's my next one, so it's good stuff.
Certainly a better pick than my All-Star Squadron 65.
Well, you know. Mine are only semi-random. So I just bring up my comics page, and I just close my eyes and clicked on one, and that's what I got. Of course, that was up to the top, sort of.
Yeah. Who was it? Was it who did the History of the Universe in cartoon comic book form? Gronick?
I don't remember that. I remember hearing about that, and it sounded pretty good.
Oh, come on, Murray, you got to know this one.
History of the Universe. That sounds familiar.
Like Matt Gronk or Matt something like that. Oh my god.
I don't know.
You're supposed to know these things.
No.
This is your fortune. Go
with Scott McCloud. He did it. Scott McCloud.
He did. Not a history. No, that's different.
Totally different.
Totally different, man. But good try.
Let's try.
Okay.
Universe. This is going to bug me. Anyhow. So what drew you to this book, though? What drew you to the book, the comic book comics?
More than likely because of Paul French mentioned it.
Okay. There it is. Cartoon History of the Universe. I found it. Ha ha. Sorry, I'm Larry Gonick.
Jr., Larry Gonick Jr. Does he sing?
Oh, you're so funny.
I know.
1978. Wow. Yes, it's the cartoon history of the universe, but it's that same thing where it's using comic books to tell real stories in little snippets. So probably not as funny though as Fred Van Lente, who can be carries funny in his pocket.
Cartoon history of the universe. Oh, there's several volumes of it.
Yes, there is.
Well, I remember seeing this now.
We need history of the universe.
Well, this is true.
You're not going to do that in an 8-page strip.
No. Well, unless it's a really short story.
Well, yeah, what's Big Bang?
Oh, it looks like he did some other books. Cartoon Guide to Statistics, The Cartoon Guide to Physics and Chemistry, and several others here.
The Cartoon Guide to the Computer.
Yeah, and he's got one on Cartoon History of the United States as well. Back from 1991. Well,
that would be an 8-page comic.
Mm-hmm. The most recent one, Cartoon History of the Modern World Part 1, from Columbus to U.S. Constitution. Interesting. So that would be kind of good. That's good stuff to have the kids read.
I might do that. I might give them the cheat sheet of the comic book version of history. Of course, they will show up and say, "But teacher, Superman was there at the signing of the Declaration of Independence." And then we get the phone call from the teacher saying, "Mr. Gerard, you need to come into the
Yes, we need to fix that.
I'm sorry, your daughter needs to actually read the textbooks." But of course, a cool teacher like Murray would be 100% behind all of this.
Oh, I'm Absolutely. Sure he would be.
It'd be required reading in Mr. Fox's class.
Totally.
Yeah.
Right. I've taken us completely off the rails.
Once you're fine.
I couldn't hold out. Oh, God, I suck.
Okay, I'm back.
All right, okay. Sorry, I have website issues there. I was kind of working on there. Just discovered something, and I should be fixed now.
They have a pill for that.
Yeah, they do.
Cartoon Guide to the Computer, Cartoon Guide to Statistics, Cartoon Guide to Chemistry. I need that.
Here's one. May 19th, 1999, The Cartoon Guide to Sex.
You and I clicked on the same thing at the same time.
1386. Okay. Maybe that might help me out a little. Hey! Interesting. Oh, wow. Oh, and you can, if you, shows you a picture as well if you click on it on the inside. Very interesting.
It's 248 pages. That is much too long for a cartoon guide to sex.
Well, that's a lot of pictures, apparently.
Oh, it is straight out of Underground Comics. Look at that.
Yeah. That would be just fun just to have around, just for the heck of it, I think. That's pretty funny.
Okay.
Anyway, so what else? Okay, we each done three. Are we continuing, or?
I'm done. I grabbed nothing more.
Yeah, got nothing?
Yeah, I came with nothing. I'm leaving with nothing.
Yeah, I probably should wrap it up. I got a few things to do before my old school gaming starts.
I have to run 7 miles today, and I have to watch football. So I'm
run 7 miles. You don't have to run. Unless something's on fire, you don't have to run 7 miles.
I do have to run 7 miles unless you want to hear about me being crippled when I try and run my half marathon.
Oh, well, okay. Well, that makes sense. But still, you know. You're telling me you have to run 7 miles. You want to run 7 miles.
Nobody wants to run 7 miles. No, ridiculous.
The only time I think running is necessary is if something's on fire, if it's lunchtime. That's pretty much it, as far as I'm concerned.
What about if you're being chased by a badger?
That's okay. Yeah, badger's chasing me. I'm okay with that. Yeah.
Honey badger, he's bad.
All right, so I think we've covered that today. Let's see.
Go 49ers. Go 49ers.
Yeah, whatever. football. Yeah. Anyway, if you want to send us an email and complain about my hatred for football, you can send an email to podcast@talesfromthelongbox.com, or you can do some commenting on the Facebook page at just do a search for talesfromthelongbox.com, and we're on there. Or you can call on the actual episodes at talesfromthelongbox.com/the show. And I believe that is it for this week.
Catch y'all later.
Okay, and we're out.